Good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's teleconference with Dr. Christina Chambreau. Dr. Chambreau is chair of the board and founder of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy that just recently had their annual conference in the D.C. area. She lectures, she teaches, she writes extensively for magazines, and maintains her own information site on the web for pets and their owners, which is www.christinachambreau.com. She taught many vet courses at the NCH Summer School for years, and everybody always gave her rave reviews, so I think we're in for an excellent, excellent time tonight. So, Dr. Chambreau, let's get going. I'd like to ask you a number of questions. We've already had a few from our pre-conference participants here. What was the most important or noticeable thing that you got out of this year's conference?
Well, there actually were so many things, it's hard to say. But one of the interesting things is that, well, first off, is just how incredible homeopathy is and what it can cure. So one of the speakers was talking about myositis, which is where the muscles, masticatory myositis, there we go. The muscles in the jaw actually become so inflamed and hardened that the dog cannot open his mouth or her mouth, and they end up starving to death. They have to have feeding tubes put in. Conventionally, the therapy is steroids, and even that doesn't work very well. And Dr. Herman presented 6 golden retrievers that she was able to completely cure, and I've heard of it many a time before, but it was nice to see 6 of them, and they were all golden retrievers. And another thing that we struggle, that conventional medicine struggles with a lot, is hyperthyroidism. And Dr. Chapman from the D.C. area presented an approach to treating feline hyperthyroidism. And then we had a discussion of the over 60 vets that were in the audience in terms of their, what do they see working the best for hyperthyroidism. And while I'm very committed to, it's a remedy for the individual as opposed to a remedy for a disease, what I will say is that a remedy worth looking at for hyperthyroidism is Natrum Muriaticum. So it's a remedy that seems to show up for a number of people. Peter DeBias did an excellent lecture on hyperthyroidism when he and I spoke in Prague at the World Small Animal Veterinary Congress about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, and Natrum Muriaticum was the remedy he used as well. We also, Dr. Pitcairn talked about obstacles to cure, and one of the things that we all spoke about was the challenge for us in working with clients who start with us and then do something conventional, particularly those of us who are doing telephone consulting. And or we have people who we've worked with, we've cured their animals, and 4 or 5 years later, either with a new animal or with that animal who's been healthy for 4 or 5 years, something happens, they go to the conventional vet, and I had a client recently who had spent 4 years struggling with the conventional approach before she found my phone number, and all of a sudden went, oh, I should call Dr. Chambreau. So what we realized, and I encourage all of you listening to this, because everybody, most everybody listening to this conference is one who's already committed to homeopathy and probably isn't doing that, but still might. But I encourage you all to frequently talk about homeopathy for animals or holistic approaches for animal health care to anybody and everybody who's around you. What we realized at the conference is that people, what they see and hear on TV and in the newspapers and from their friends and their neighbors and people in the dog park is they hear about heartworm prevention and flea prevention, and are you using Advantage or are you using Revolution? I hear there's a new one that does heartworms and fleas and ticks. Maybe we should use that one. So they're surrounded by thinking conventionally. So it's really up to each of us to reach out and communicate as much as we can in as many places as we can so that people are hearing the holistic approach and the homeopathic approach enough that when their animals get sick, they'll think about that first. And they'll think about it in terms of prevention as well, which is really important. So that's really one of the big, couple of the big takeaways from the conference.
That leads to another question, though. When we're trying to tell people about going to finding a homeopathic veterinarian, what kind of clues can we give them to find a good one?
Oh, boy, is that a great one. If any, I should post it on my web, and at some point in the next year it will be posted on my web. But if you want this, I have email me through the website and ask for working with a homeopathic or holistic veterinarian. And I have an entire handout on that. The most important thing you can do is educate yourself about not so much homeopathic remedies, but more importantly, the process of how our animals become ill and how they recover. So I recommend there are two places that really cover this well. First is I have a few pages of it in the Healthy Animals Journal, my book. So in the beginning, I do an overview, and I have two or three pages on cure, palliation, and suppression, using other words, of course. And then Don Hamilton's book, Homeopathic Care for Cats and Dogs, Chapter 2 and Chapter 3, is about the nature of illness or the nature of disease and the nature of cure. So you get about, I don't know, 40 pages talking about how we get ill and how we get well. And then, of course, for all of you who are really studying and doing homeopathy who are on this call, there's always the very best place to go, which is the Organon. So reading the Organon will also clue you into that. So from my perspective, the two things that are very important is, number one, that they take a great case. If you have a, if you go to a homeopathic veterinarian and they say, well, your cat has hyperthyroidism, so we're going to use this combination remedy that cures hyperthyroidism, that may work. I'm not saying it won't work. But if you want classical homeopathy, then you would sort of turn around and walk out the door. If, however, the homeopath said, well, your cat has hyperthyroidism, but we're definitely going to work with that, but what I need to know is more about your cat as an individual. Tell me something about, does your cat prefer warm or cold? What's your cat's appetite like? What other problems has your cat had over the years? Oh, that's interesting. Now tell me more about that. So that's what you want to be hearing from the homeopathic veterinarian, to know that they're a good one. The second is that when you're looking at the response to any treatment, homeopathic or otherwise, a good practitioner, and certainly a good homeopathic practitioner, will have a conversation with you about what's happening with the vital force. So if you forget and you say, oh, you know, he's really shaking his head a whole lot and the ears are looking really thick, and so I think we're not doing well, and I'm thinking maybe we need to do something different. If the veterinarian then goes, well, you know, I guess you're probably right, and then starts looking for another remedy, you want to maybe be a little suspicious. If instead the veterinarian says, well, now, just a minute, I hear you on the ear, but let's find out how Susie is doing otherwise. Tell me about Susie's energy level. She was only walking about a mile. How long is she walking now? Oh, and you remember that she's walking 3 or 4 miles now and has lots more energy. So when you're looking at the response to treatment, you are looking not just at the pathology or the physical condition that you can observe, but you're looking at everything about the animal, what's gotten better, what's gotten worse. And that's why keeping a journal is so important to track symptoms. And speaking of that, if you're doing your own journal, a really important thing is to make sure you write down in pretty colors the fun, wonderful things your animals are doing, because what we focus on is what we get more of. So while for homeopathy we need the detailed, quantified symptoms, so he's circling to the left, how many minutes does he circle to the left? How many times a day does he circle to the left? Is anything happening around the time when he circles to the left? So you need to have all that written down. But then you want to put, oh, he was wagging his tail four or five times today. Or he came and greeted me at the door, which he hasn't done in a long time. So write those in pretty colors so you focus on them. If your homeopathic veterinarian isn't looking at the whole individual animal, then you still may be working with a great one. Maybe they're so intuitive they don't need to do that. And as long as you know that you're getting a good result, then stay with them. There is no one right way. The other main thing is that they need to be able to answer your questions when you're, and or say they don't know. And, of course, they need to not be pushing conventional medicine, vaccines, chemicals, things like that.
Would it be possible for somebody who lives far away from a homeopathic vet to be able to study enough homeopathy that they could work with a conventional vet but still have the benefit of homeopathy?
They absolutely could. They can also work with homeopathic veterinarians by phone. So in the early mid-80s, when I began practicing homeopathy, there were about five of us in the country who became trained in homeopathy who were willing to work by phone because people just begged us to, and we tried it, and it worked. And homeopathy is the only holistic modality that lends itself so well to this. Flower essences does as well, and maybe essential oils. But homeopathy as a deep curative method really does work well by telephone. So the best would be to work with a homeopathic veterinarian. Next best would be to, if you're well-trained in homeopathy yourself, whether it's for people or for animals, since there are few animal courses you can take for training, but if you're well-trained in human homeopathy from some of the wonderful courses that are available, you can then apply that to your animals. And it applies the same way. Everybody goes, well, isn't it different treating animals? It's no different treating animals than it is treating young infants. You can't ask the infant baby if their ear would feel better if they put a hot compress on it or a cold compress, can you? But you can ask the mom, well, have you tried putting a hot or cold compress on? Oh, yeah, if I get near it with heat, he starts to cry, but if I put cold, then he stops crying. Same thing with your animals. So everything that would be used in treating children could be used to treat animals. So absolutely, there are many people who are successfully using homeopathy to treat their animals while they work with a conventional veterinarian. If you can find a conventional veterinarian who is okay with you doing this, then I think you're fine. The struggle and the time I think it really doesn't work is when you're working with conventional veterinarians who are not willing to work with you and they end up doing stuff behind your back. So you have to have a great, you know, a really good conventional vet in order for that to work.
But you would still, like the time when I talked to you a year ago, I still needed my vet's diagnosis to be able to tell you what was going on.
Sometimes we do and sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if it's a behavioral problem, we probably don't need it.
Right.
Very often, at the beginning, we don't need it. So I'm going to tell a brief story which has several tidbits in it. One is the need or not the need for conventional medicine. Two is homeopathy can work in spite of some pretty major physical problems and can help you while you're waiting to get conventional care or diagnosis if that's needed. A very, very holistic client who I'd worked with for a long time called me because her cat was throwing up and not eating. So I took the case, and the cat the next gave her prescribed a remedy. The next day, the cat was fine, eating, passing stool, passing urine, active, not vomiting. 2 days later, vomiting again, not eating. Some new symptoms, so we prescribed a different remedy. Fine the next day, which is already making us a little suspicious. It was an acute problem, so it could go away very quickly. But still, it's come back twice now. So it came back a third time. Now, at that point, I said, let's go to the conventional vet and see what's going on. Conventional vet couldn't find anything on physical. She did an abdominal x-ray and because of vomiting, so you're doing the abdomen, and there was nothing. They suggested doing a barium series, and the owner declined. We worked on the cat for another 2 weeks with the same thing, coming and going, coming and going. Finally, I said, go get the barium. They went and got the barium, and there was an obstruction, and they went in and did surgery, and there was a piece of corn cob stuck in the intestine, and the intestine was necrosed around it. And they had to cut the intestine, take out the corn cob, and resect the intestine. Now, what the surgeon said, though, was that this was an incredibly clean abdomen. There was not a hint of infection. It was healthy. And all we had was a necrosis right around the corn cob. So what homeopathy had done was it was moving that corn cob in and out of the stomach, but it couldn't quite get it to go all the way out again. And the body couldn't break down the corn cob. So that even with something that physical, we were able to help this animal's vital force maintain itself. But we had to get rid of, as Hahnemann says, the inciting cause. So sometimes we need a diagnosis, other times we don't.
That's a good comment there about obstacles to cure. What other obstacles do you find and do you have to teach people to look for?
First, I want to mention one that's in the Organon that we're finding is not an obstacle to cure. Hahnemann, in his paragraph on obstacles to cure, says that bladder stones have to first be removed before you can cure a person. And we have found in homeopathy that bladder stones that are visible on radiographs, when you find the right remedy, they will often completely dissolve. So that is not an obstacle to cure necessarily for us. The major obstacles to cure that we run into, and this is not true for every animal, but frequently, if vaccines are given, the symptoms, if we haven't completely cured the animal, the symptoms may regress and reappear, and then we have to continue treatment. In a very few animals, the vaccines will really push them over the edge. Once they're cured, they should be able to tolerate the vaccines, just a few, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. Another obstacle to cure can be diet. So some animals just cannot seem to get completely healthy on a processed food diet, and they need to be on a fresh food diet. Others can. Other obstacles to cure can be toxins, chemicals, poisons. Now, these are in vaccines. They're also in flea preventatives. They're also in your household cleaners, your yard. Some animals are more sensitive than others to this. I lectured once with people from, drawing a blank, the Audubon Society, and they were really talking about toxins. She lived in the center of a two-acre parcel, and when her neighbors would spray chemicals on their yards, and she's in the center of a two-acre parcel, she and her animals would get ill. The other obstacle to cure can be an emotional relationship between the people in the house. So sometimes that is a piece that has to be addressed for the animals to completely recover. And finally, to shift again to the other side of it a little bit from obstacle to cure, is a way of, for some people, to have cures happen. And actually, Richard Pitcairn spoke about this a little bit in the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy conference this time. And I have a client who became trained as a Christian Scientist. And in Christian Science, you actually see that any kind of disease, even a broken bone, is an illusion, that man and people and animals, humans and animals' natural state is to be healthy. And so they visualize, so believe, so see the animal or person in their healthy state that the animal or person just becomes healthy. And I have seen this happen with this one client I have. She will call me in a panic. I ask her if she's doing her Christian Science work. She says, oh, I forgot, or something's been going on. She does it. And so I don't treat her animal at that point, and I say, well, call me back. And only one time out of 10 have I had to actually use a homeopathic remedy with her animal. Any other obstacles to cure you know of, Christy, you want me to speak on?
Human family dynamics.
Yeah, I said that. Yep, between the people in the house, absolutely. So often they need to. But the other piece, okay, and this is really important, what I want to say now, is as we say these things, vaccines, diet, interpersonal relationships, then you go, oh, my God, I've been doing that. I'm responsible for my animal being ill. No, you're not. You're doing the very best you can, and your animal is on their path, and all you can do is the best you can do at any one moment. And 10 years ago, that was to vaccinate, feed crappy food, and use drugs, or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. In retrospect, if you feel the animal didn't do well because of that, there's no reason to feel guilty. You are doing the best you can. So I do want to put that in. And I want to emphasize that everything I say today, I have opposite examples. So I know of Great Danes in Chicago. This one family has Great Danes from many different lines. They have two or three at a time. They feed processed food, vaccinate all the time, and their Great Danes live to be 12 on an average. I know a woman who runs a listserv on cats, and she thinks cats are mainly insect eaters and need to snack. She feeds dry food all the time, and her cats are living to be 18 to 24. So there is no one right answer, and she vaccinates all the time. And there is no one right answer. It's just there's some things that, in general, it would be better if we did them. Sort of like there are people who live to be 100, and they smoke and they drink a lot, and yet that's not what you would recommend to live a long life.
Is there good research going on in animal homeopathy nowadays?
There is. There's a wonderful veterinarian, Dr. Shelley Epstein, who's at the Wilmington Animal Hospital, which is an AHA-certified hospital in Wilmington, Delaware. And she has been lecturing. She went to the North America Veterinary Congress this January, and she also lectured at the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy Conference this month. And she has a lot of studies on people and animals that she has collected to show the efficacy of homeopathy in animals. One, a really nice one, a speaker that's spoken for the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy in the past is Dr. Sue Armstrong from Canada and England. And she did a study with horses in a racing, they call them a yard there, a racing stable. And they did homeopathy with these horses. And by using homeopathy, they decreased their costs significantly and increased the amount of money they were winning at the races, increased the happiness, basically, of the horses, and decreased the amount of illnesses that the horses had. Another study that we also have heard about at the conferences was by Lisbeth, can't remember her last name. Sorry, guys. She's a Dutch homeopath, and she did a very nice study with heifers. I think it was calves, and worked with the farmers to figure out what they could work with that would make a good study. And so she's done a good study on that. More of the studies seem to be done in Europe than they have been here in the U.S., so we definitely need to do more of that here. But it is happening. I think before we open for questions, what I want to cover is the response to cure.
I have one quick question mm-hmm. here. You've mentioned several wonderful talks at the conference. Were any of these lectures recorded?
They have always been recorded. I didn't actually see the recording set up this time, but I suspect it is. The website for the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy, which, by the way, I'm no longer chair of. I'm a past founder of, but I don't. Right now I'm working with the people who are getting certified, is www.theavh.org. So it's www.theavh.org. And what you can do is to contact the secretary and find out what's available for this year. But we
and is that where you could also find the CD Homeopathy Around the World?
Boy, I think the Homeopathy Around the World is at Whole Health Now.
Okay.
Is the place to find that. Oh, that is awesome. We'll talk about that as soon as we come. As soon as we do some questions. Or we'll do it both. So there's this incredible video that we saw at the AVH conference and at the NCH conference called Homeopathy Around the World. And Carol Boyce made this film by going around the world and looking at the projects in homeopathy that are happening, research, talking about research. They did research in Cuba with using nozodes and leptospirosis was what they were treating there.
Mm-hmm.
And trauma in Haiti, AIDS epidemic in Africa. Jeremy Scheer feels he's really found the genus epidemicus for it. Two projects in Kenya. They just, you know, it's awesome. So Nepal, my homeopath, Bharati Devakote is actually in the video for just 1 second. I saw her face. So to order that, you go to wholehealthnow.com/world. And all the profits from this go to different homeopathic projects that are on the video. Whole Health Now underwrote it. So your support of Whole Health Now by purchasing books and tapes and radar and all of that can make a big difference towards things like this happening. So be sure you see this. It's awesome, isn't it,
yeah,
Christy?
It was. I mean, everybody was teary-eyed when
yes.
they saw it.
At NCH, they raised $8,000 from people watching this
mm-hmm.
to go to these different projects. So, so several people asked about how do you tell how an animal is responding to treatment? And the reason I'm going to do this before we open to questions is you may still have questions after I say this. First, it is difficult to tell. It is one of the best things that Dr. Pitcairn does in training veterinarians is his ability to work with veterinarians to learn how to evaluate the response to treatment. It's easy to say, and many of you listening to this have, I'm sure, studied it, and you can quote what cure is, what palliation is, what suppression is. But then when you're actually trying to evaluate your animal, it makes it a little, it sometimes can be tricky. So first we're just going to look at the basics. What is it we're trying to do in homeopathy? We're making an assumption that there's a vital force that is out of balance. There's a vital force that is mistuned. We're going to look for the homeopathic remedy that has the similar vibrational pattern. And when we find that, by correcting the vibrational pattern, all the symptoms go away because there's no longer a mistuned vital force that's producing symptoms to try to keep itself well. So that's the first thing. Just be thinking not so much about the specifics of what's happening, but that you want to see that something's happening with that energy field, with that vital force. So it's not this just pure rational thinking. It's got to be this intuitive looking at the whole animal to see that there's been some response. So number one, you've taken a good case and you've quantified every symptom, and you have a wide range of symptoms, even if they are no use to you at all in looking them up in the repertory or in selecting the remedy. Then you give the remedy and you carefully note what changes. We have to now split this into two conversations. If it's an acute problem, the symptoms have recently happened. They're usually pretty strong. You give a remedy and you expect those symptoms to go away fairly quickly in about the same period of time that they came. If, however, and at the same time, if we've really given the correct remedy, those symptoms will go away and you have a sense that the animal is better than they ever were before. A very useful list to look at is called the early warning signs of illness. The early warning signs of illness are you can find them at the AVH website. You can also find them at my website. And these are the little things that Hahnemann talks about, the chronic mistunings that we sort of forget about. We no longer pay attention to. So goop in the corner of the eyes of an animal, red line along the gum, doggy odor necessitating bathing. Those types of things are an example of the more than 30 or 40 symptoms that are listed, probably even more than that. When, even in an acute condition, when you've given the correct remedy, you're going to see some of those go away. Or you'll see little more energy, little more, you know, just feeling a little bit better, interacting better, not being as touchy. Whatever, there's going to be some sort of global improvement. So it's fairly easy with an acute situation. Most of our conditions with our animals are much more chronic. And in that instance, you want to pay attention to the duration of symptoms. How long have the symptoms been going on? Because it's going to take about a month for every year the symptoms are going on, if not longer, for the symptoms to go away. You don't want the symptoms to go away too quickly, because then it's like giving a drug. You aren't actually watching. You aren't getting the elegance of seeing the vital force heal and therefore the symptoms slowly go away. So what you're looking for first and always, so in my book, The Healthy Animals Journal, there's a bookmark where you actually, I've pre-printed the most important things to pay attention to. So number one is energy level. How's the energy level changed since giving the remedy? Number two is the emotional state. How's the emotional state? Better, worse? Now that's where it gets hard to evaluate sometimes. Because say you have an animal that's been very ill for a long time, and they're really sweet, affectionate, calm, and then you give a remedy. Maybe they're in a hypothyroid state and you give them calcarea carbonicum, and over the next few weeks they turn into this actually slightly crabby, independent, I could care less about you, sort of dictatorial, dominating sort of animal that you're not sure you like. You want that sweet, timid thing back again. But the ill animal had the timidity, but now you have more vibrancy, more alertness. And so this can be, again, a tricky area to evaluate, but you're looking for an improvement in the emotional state. You're looking for an improvement in appetite as well, and then improvement in the other symptoms. There's Hering's Law, which says it's not really a law, and it says that the symptoms should resolve from the inside or more severe to the outside or less severe. That we should see first the most current symptoms go away, then the earlier, then the earlier, and then the earlier. But what can you do when you have so many animals that you've adopted from rescues or adopted from the shelter or horses that are passed from person to person? You don't know their history that well, certainly not the small nuances of their history. You may know major things. So that can be a challenge, but you're looking for it moving back in that direction. And that can be confusing because what if an earlier symptom was a deeper symptom? Then it looks like you're going in the wrong direction. So it's more about this. What I'm trying to have you see here is that it's not just following the rules, but it's looking for a real deep improvement in health. So cure is when the symptoms go away, appropriate to how long they've been there, along with global improvement. Frequently, we will see a slight aggravation of the current symptoms 3 to 5 days down the line. Sometimes, if you're using LM potencies, you won't see an aggravation until you're about ready to finish up with your LMs, but you will see the improvement in general overall vitality. Then, if it's palliation, the symptoms quickly go away, and something else happens and they become more ill. Skin case, a dog with skin problems called me, and I prescribed the remedy. 2 weeks later, the owner's first words to me on the phone is, "Oh, Dr. Chambreau, you're a miracle worker." And I went to myself, uh-oh. On close questioning, I couldn't elicit any negative changes. And she didn't really have anything negative from before. So I just knew, though. So I kept pressing. And finally she said, oh, I'm glad you asked me again. She has been biting the children. So I then had to say, well, were the children bothering her before? And now she's more healthy, so she's biting them just to stand up for herself. But it wasn't that. So I told her, you know, I gave the wrong remedy. This is what we call suppression. And I've stopped the skin symptoms, but really too quickly. And now she's showing these more severe, this mental symptom of aggression. So then we backtracked and we gave a remedy that covered both the aggression, which is part of her energy field, her vital force, and the skin problem that had been there for several years. So that's suppression. Palliation is where you give the remedy and they're better as long as you're giving the remedy, but overall they're not feeling better. It's just the symptoms are held in check. Like a cat that has inflammatory bowel syndrome and you're giving silica because you think it's the best remedy and you're really pleased because the diarrhea is gone, but you didn't look any further. You didn't pay attention to the energy level, the emotional state, and then the diarrhea comes back. And you up the potency, and then maybe the silica stops working. So you want to be paying attention not just to the one symptom, but to all of them. So with palliation, the symptoms go away too quickly, and they return as soon as you stop giving the remedy, or they start coming back in the face of even giving the remedy. They may still start coming back. So that's more palliation. It's always confusing, but as long as you're focusing on the whole animal, you're going to do well. That's the key. And it's very tricky to do that. I recommend if you're doing homeopathy on animals yourself, working with a conventional vet and treating the animals yourself, try to find a partner, maybe somebody that you studied with or another person you know that's treating animals with homeopathy, and feed the case back and forth between each other so that someone else who's not living with that animal can ask you, well, you know, is she feeling better overall? Because you may have forgotten to ask yourself that question. But that is the main question. Is the animal feeling better overall? Whew, there. Should we take a break and let people ask questions?
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, let me get people in. All right, please ask questions, maybe one at a time. Does anybody have any questions?
Hi, I have a question.
Yes.
Do you incorporate any kind of heavy metal chelation protocol into your practice?
It's a really good question to ask about protocols. I don't do any, quote, protocols, because I really deal with every animal as an individual. And I'm dealing, actually, what we're going to do is after each question, Christy, if you could mute it, and I'll answer the question, and then we'll open it up again.
Okay, I'll mute now.
Thanks, it was a little noisy. So I don't have a particular protocol, whether it's for heavy metals or for drug use or for vaccine use, because to me, every animal is an individual, and each animal needs the treatment that's appropriate for that animal. So I may see 10 animals who've been vaccinated, and of those 10 animals who've been vaccinated, 5 of them clearly have symptoms that I feel are related to the vaccinations because they're psychotic symptoms or because they have they've appeared soon after the vaccination. Now, all 5 of those animals don't get the same vaccination remedy. There's over 40 remedies that are known to help relieve vaccine problems. It may even be a remedy that's not in that rubric. So I'm going by the individual symptoms. So if animals have heavy metal toxicity, usually the right homeopathic remedy will reestablish homeostasis in the animal, and they will clear on their own. Now, I'm not saying there's no place for that, and there could be, you know, there certainly could be animals who need to go through a more like herbal detox or nutritional support detox, and that would be on an individual basis. Okay, want to open it up again for another one?
Okay. Next question.
Topic you all want covered? I feel like there's nobody out there.
I'll ask another question.
Okay.
When you say there's remedies for like vaccines, do you ever give the actual remedy? Like say for example, would you give rabies vaccine? Dog got rabies vaccine to help say clear it out of the system?
Okay, thanks for your question. I don't believe in, quote, clearing anything. I really believe in picking the individual symptoms that an animal is showing and then giving the remedy that most closely matches those symptoms, which would be called the similimum. A lot of people give Fuya after every vaccination to, quote, clear the negative effects. Other people give Hypericum. Other people give Letum. Other people give Anozode. Other people give a remedy made from the vaccine itself. And any of these... Anytime you have multiple approaches like this, you know something's wrong. So what any of those approaches does is it makes the assumption, say you're giving Fuya, it makes the assumption that every dog and every cat and every horse given any one of up to 50 vaccinations is going to have an identical response, negative response, that will put its energy field into a Fuya state. Therefore, by giving Fuya, you will correct that state and prevent any future problems. So for me, homeopathy, that's cookbook homeopathy that's actually inaccurate even, because it's not based on the individual symptoms that are there. Because the rabies vaccine seems to produce such a similar disease in so many animals, while I do not do this, I can see a little more reasoning and rationale for giving listen after a rabies vaccine. I do not do that. I recommend waiting after a vaccine and looking at the early warning signs list, seeing if anything changes, seeing if old symptoms come back or there's a decrease in energy level or new symptoms appear, and then giving the correct remedy. However, I can see some rationale in doing listen. I do not see a rationale in Thujolidum, Hypericum, or any of the others. The same way some people give Nux Vomica after every heartworm administration. They give Nux Vomica after every frontline administration. They give Fragaria on a regular basis to prevent tartar buildup. They give a heartworm nozode to prevent heartworms. So do you see how this is now not even closely related to finding the similimum? And so I encourage people to not look for cookbook methods, but rather to find the homeopathic remedy that actually matches that animal as best we can. I mean, I know that's a challenge. I'm not denying it. That certainly can be a challenge. Now, in terms of some of the things I mentioned, this is now not so much homeopathy, but it is practical tips for dealing with some of these issues. Number one, vaccinations. There is no need, and this is according to all the conventional immunologists, the leading veterinary colleges, et cetera, AVMA, all of that, there's no need to really give any vaccines other than rabies every 3 years or whatever is required by law in your state once they've had their initial round. Some people say give it every 3 years. Some people say give all the vaccines, the distemper and parvo for dog, the distemper for cats, do them every 3 years. Some say do them just as a kitten and puppy and then repeat in a year. I say do them as a kitten and puppy or not at all and build a natural immunity and then treat with homeopathy if they come down with one of the illnesses. The Lyme vaccine is a particularly nasty vaccine, and homeopathically, in our homeopathic practices, we see a number of animals who come to us because they've gotten severely ill with what looks like Lyme disease after getting the Lyme vaccine. So we don't recommend anything but distemper and parvo for dogs, distemper for cats, no feline leukemia for cats, and then the rabies every 3 years. Now, the rabies has to be as a puppy or kitten, then 1 year later, then every 3 years. Do the minimum that your state, township, city allows in terms of rabies. There are ways that you can help decrease the negative effect by using Reiki, increasing the calcium they're getting for a few days before and after, using a flower essence called vaccine detox. All of those are totally safe, can't hurt, and might help. Fleas and ticks. Healthy dogs don't get fleas most of the time, dogs and cats. So the goal is to get them healthy, and then they're not going to have fleas. Ticks, there's something called, there are many cedar oil products. One company is Cedarside, where you can spray the foundation of your house and the entrances, so fleas don't come in your house. You can spray the margins of your property. I wouldn't spray your whole yard, but you can spray the sort of entry areas, and that keeps ticks out of your yard. Then I like rose geranium oil topically for preventing ticks, or VetraScience has a product, Vetra Repel. There's another one called Ectopamine, and there's several others out there now that are made from essential oils. and those are very good at keeping ticks away. However, the very, very, very best way to have no ticks around your yard is if you would keep chickens or guinea hens. They will keep the ticks away in a very healthy way and provide you with good fresh eggs for your, to feed your dogs and cats. Heartworms, the heartworm medication, it's not a heartworm preventative. It's a heartworm morning after pill. So it doesn't kill, it doesn't prevent the larvae from entering the dog as they fall out of the mosquito's mouth. It kills several larval stages as they're slowly migrating over a six-month period to the heart. Therefore, they don't need to be given as often as it says. Many holistic people do not give any heartworm preventative. If they get heartworms, we treat them holistically and they do fine. I've had two clients in 30 years have dogs come down with heartworms in my practice. Some are using preventative, some aren't, but that's the only two I've had that actually developed it in my practice. So what I recommend is where you have a winter, wait until you've seen mosquitoes for a month, then give one dose, then get your blood test and give the first HeartGuard, or nowadays I think you can only get HeartGuard Plus easily. If you can get the plain HeartGuard, it's better. And then repeat it every 2 months until you don't see mosquitoes. So maybe you'll give 3 or 4 doses as opposed to 12 doses. Pay attention to the early warning signs. After you've given the heartworm prevention, do they feel loggy for 2 or 3 days? If so, pick a different heartworm preventative medication or think about not doing it. When they're older, probably it's better not to do it because the chance of them getting the heartworms versus having a little weaker liver, you might want to pull back on it at that point. So that's a few practical pet tips. Another that I think is important to talk about before we open it again for any questions, a lot of people have questions about what kind of potency do you use with animals, and what's the posology that you should use? How should you be administering remedies to animals? There are a lot of myths in this area, and part of it is because in Hahnemann's 4th edition of the Organon, he was basically giving the potency dry, the remedy dry. He might put it in some liquid to sip it, but he was just taking a 30C, 200C, 6C, and giving it to the patient. In the 5th edition, he felt there was a lot of aggravations from the first one, so he was having people dilute the medicine and stir it each time or shake it each time. So you were slightly changing the potency. And in the 6th edition, he moved into the LM potencies. For many years, until about maybe 15 years ago, when Dr. Luke DeShepherd really started teaching about this and pushing it, we've been doing the 4th edition. In the veterinary community, most veterinarians are still doing mostly the 4th edition prescribing. However, more and more veterinarians are beginning to do LM or the 5th edition of diluting and succussing each time. I've done all three because I was raised doing 4th edition of just giving dry potencies. Didn't see much problem with it, saw a lot of cures with it, so wasn't sure I needed to change. But I do find that with chronic conditions where it looks like we're needing to treat for a long time, it does seem to work better when I can use either 5th edition or the LM potencies, so we can be shaking and diluting as we go along. I'm getting more gentle cures this way, especially when there's severe tissue pathology. So dogs with Lyme renal disease, for instance, cats and dogs with renal disease from any cause, any real pathology, heart disease, bladder stones, those would be ones I'd be looking at using for sure, LM or diluting and succussing a 30C or 200C. So that's the main difference. Now, in terms of administration, I love having a chance to offer animals the choice of whether they want the remedy or not, which is one of the reasons I like using 5th and 6th edition. I've discovered that a lot of animals know when they need their remedy when it's being repeated. Other times they don't. So at least people can offer the remedy and observe. Does the animal turn up their... They put the remedy in a little bowl of water, a little saucer of water, and bring it over to the dog or cat. Does the animal look at it and then, like, run away like they've been poisoned? Or do they sort of just ignore it? Do they come over and sniff it, stick their nose in it? They've gotten a dose. They only need a few drops in their mucous membranes, nose, or mouth. And some dogs get to the point where when their guardian goes into the kitchen to make up the remedy, I know one woman had St. Bernards, and she had like 10 St. Bernards in the house, small house too. And when she was making up the remedy, the one dog that she was making it up for would come into the kitchen. Just amazing. If an animal, like particularly when you're dealing with feral cats, if it needs to be given in food, that's usually fine. If I'm giving a single dose of a 200C and planning to wait a month or 2 months to evaluate the response to that remedy, I'd like it to be given directly into the mouth, either in water or crushed dry pellets. But if it's a repeated remedy, if we're not getting any response when it's given in the food or milk or cream cheese, something very bland, then we can stop doing it that way and force it in the mouth. But I'd rather the animal be happy and not be stressed, or the owner be stressed by giving the medicine. So therefore, it is okay to do it in food. And boy, I've run us close to the edge here. Christy, I guess you better open it up for questions.
Right, we've got just a few more minutes for questions.
Going back to the cedarside and rose geranium, if a pet is under active treatment getting remedies, will those antidote at all?
Usually not, in my experience. Some people say yes, some say no.
Can I ask another one?
Yep.
Okay. I now have I'm up to three generations of homeopathically treated animals.
Great.
Does it help you, bringing a new, one of the younger ones to you, does it help going over the history, both remedies and symptoms, of parents and grandparents?
Yes.
Or are you just focusing on that patient?
Nope. Definitely focus on both when you have it. Usually there's probably not as much as there is with people, but there is some benefit for sure. There were a couple of examples of that that I can't remember in detail at the conference.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Other questions?
Yes. I've been fostering puppies that are coming up from shelters in the South. They're very young. Each one comes with skin conditions, and I suspect that they're being dipped into some kind of caustic chemical as they come into the shelter in case they might have fleas or something. And the puppies are so young, what I'm seeing is the itching and not much more. I don't know if there's any kind of protocol to help these puppies before they get adopted.
Here's what I would do. I would start looking at adding into your repertoire some general holistic treatments, not just homeopathy. So I would be offering Reiki to those animals. I'd be offering gentle, soothing skin treatments like witch hazel, aloe vera, rescue remedy rinses, lavender rinses, things like that. Flower essences, skin soothe from spirit essences, and their other crab apple from Bach flowers. So I'd work with those more generic ones when you don't actually have the symptoms in front of you.
All right.
Now,
thank
if
you.
They're coming to you with anything else at all going on, like you notice that this one's really timid, you know, then that may give you just enough. You've got timid and itching.
Right.
Or they've got a little upper respiratory and they're itching. Well, maybe aconite. So even if you have just one or two symptoms, it can help you. But I would also add in the other ancillary treatments.
Right, right. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
One more question.
I was wondering whether I can ask a question about the suppression again.
Mm-hmm.
With an example, I have a cat that I treated a few years ago with rodent ulcer, self-treated, I don't know that much about homeopathy, with Calibitch 200, and it completely disappeared, but then it came back in 2 years, and then I tried 1M potency, and it was a little bit affected, but not too much. Is that suppression?
No, that would not be suppression. It's one of two things. It's either a partial cure, because you were focusing just on one symptom, so we don't know all the other things that might have been happening, the little things, but or it was palliation, which means that you, as long as you give the remedy, it makes it go away, but it wasn't quite the right remedy. So when you went up to the higher potency, you have to be more accurate, and therefore it didn't have as much of an effect because it was a close remedy but not exactly the remedy. So you have to be looking at more symptoms than just the rodent ulcer, but it was not suppression.
Okay, thank you.
Now,
okay,
can they stay on?
Our hour is up. Thank you so much. It's been an excellent evening. We've learned so much, and I do believe this whole interview is being recorded and will be available on the Whole Health Now site shortly.
It will be, for sure.
Great.
They're very good at that, and I would recommend to everybody that you access past ones as well. Glenn Dupree's spoken as well as I have.
Yep.
And thank you very much, Christy, for organizing this for us.
Oh, you're very welcome, and so good night to everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shambo.
Bye.